The quantum mechanics lingo. Incites you, it provokes you to say such things as, and I say because I really mean saying things, not anything else. So the language of quantum mechanics provokes you to say things like manipulating probabilities. What if the probability of this event is such and such? And what if it changes? I would like to show you that this is utter nonsense. It's baseless. It's linguistic construct and nothing more. It pertains to the to my series about explicit versus implicit knowledge, and I would like to address it to Ryan Falk because I really met this notion of probability manipulation early in my childhood while reading some D-list celebrity science fiction. I don't know, I don't remember whether it was a novel or a short story, but I certainly remember it was D-list, some graphomania, nothing more. I don't remember the name of the author. I don't remember the narrative, the fabula of this story. I only remember one episode. It was engraved in my childhood memory. The notion of a probability drive, a mechanical device, well, quantum mechanical device that manipulates probabilities itself, making it such that probability of finding you in another spot in the universe is significantly higher than zero. So if you launch it sufficiently many times, you end up teleported. Because it changes probabilities. From the quantum mechanics standpoint, it is sound. It is sound in the sense of the syntactic possibilities that quantum mechanic language offers. But it feels bullshit, doesn't it? When you read it, something feels wrong. And this is feeling. You don't know quantum mechanics. I don't know quantum mechanics. Nobody knows quantum mechanics. Richard Feynman doesn't know it. Didn't. Never had. Me, not me, I am a child. I am 7 or 8 years old, I am reading this novel. I certainly have no idea about quantum mechanics. I don't even know the name. And I feel something wrong. It cannot be true. It cannot be possible. Absolutely. It just feels that way. And this is our implicit belief, my personally implicit belief, that it is bullshit. And it turned out to be real bullshit. So I'm about to explicitly demonstrate to you that this is bullshit, but the important point in the light of the Ryan Falk's insight about implicit knowledge importance is that the investigation into the bullshitness of this bullshit was started by implicit feeling of a child. It wasn't, but by that age, I read it. I doubt it was even learned, but perhaps it's not impossible that I have already learned it, but even if I learned it, even if it wasn't inherited somehow from my parents, it was learned in such an implicit way that I cannot detect the fact of learning. Okay, the battery saver. It was utterly implicit, thoroughly implicit. It's wonderful. So you must understand that your scientific endeavors are predicated on your implicit beliefs. You venture into investigating something when you believe, when you feel it sufficiently strong one way or another. So, no implicit knowledge is possible without implicit beliefs. Implicit beliefs of right kind. You can take a look at the ancient civilizations, very, very advanced Egyptians. They didn't have implicit feelings that could motivate them to put all the knowledge they had into good use. They accumulated the clergy, how you call them, not shamans, rather clergy, but for a scientific mind, very little difference between clergy and shamans. But well, why have I tried to maintain the distinction in this case? I don't know, just to maintain my terminology straight. The priests of ancient Egypt had accumulated quite a lot of very sound knowledge about astronomy, and they never put it to any good use because they didn't feel like it. They lacked something implicit in their psyche to feel that this knowledge is more important than they apply it. Than those applications for this knowledge they had for many, many millennia. It is another interesting point that people, very smart people, opened my eyes to it. That ancient Egypt is so long in time, that for ancient Egyptians that we perceive as ancient Egyptians, their pyramids were ancient already. They were tourist attraction. So ancient Egyptians visits pyramids as relics of a distant past. That's funny. Never mind. Manipulation of probabilities. Why is it not possible? It is not possible, not because of any physical reasons. It is impossible for purely logical reasons. I will return to this topic. I have several leitmotifs in my in the life of mine of my scientific endeavors. So one of the leitmotifs is logical impossibilities. Please remember this notion. Some things are more impossible than other things. Something could be technologically impossible, something is physically impossible, so laws of physics prohibited. But there are things of utmost impossibility, of absolute impossibility, beyond any science and above science. It is logical impossibility, something that exists only in our language. There is no ground in universe for this notion to exist in matter, in reality, because we created some knowledge as an artifact of our language, and it is nothing more than that. And whatever transformations, actions, effects we ascribe or apply to this notion, it is all syntax constructions. These, it is all lingual artifacts. They bear no logical possibility behind for them. One of the most important logical impossibilities is teleportation and probability manipulation. Why? Because probability is a statement of our knowledge. I reiterate, probability describes the state of our knowledge about an object, something, a process, whatever object we choose. If we describe it probabilistically, it means we are capturing in symbolic mathematics our lack of information about this object. Our lack of information could have, and it in fact does have, specific properties, and we use probability theory to utilize this property to first describe them, to first formulate the properties of our non-knowledge, which are very specific and turned out to be useful, and then we utilize those partial parts of knowledge inside our non-knowledge about this object, and we use probability theory to do so. Very useful things, very useful thing, but it is a method for tackling our non-knowledge about something. So probability, third time, once again, probability is not a property of any physical object. Physical objects don't have probabilities. Quantum objects do have probabilities because quantum mechanics itself is an extension of probability theory. It is just another layer of probability theory that is perfectly suited, tailored for describing behavior of elementary particles as we perceive them in our experiments. We can't even say they are particles. They are perceived particles given the context and mechanics of the experiments we run about them. And quantum mechanics works perfectly, specifically because it was from the very beginning tailored to tackle the lack of information about the events that happen with these particles in between measurements, in between experimentations. And Richard Feynman himself, he specifically, explicitly stated that his entire endeavor into quantum mechanics was motivated solely by the lack of the knowledge what is happening between the measurements. I paraphrase him, but trust me, I've learned this part of his lectures very, very hard. And I recommend you read Richard Feynman too, because he's enlightening. He said, we used to use smooth models, like uninterruptible. I forgot the term. Continuous. We use continuous models for elementary particles that run between measurements. We measure something at one point, and then we model what is going on by means of very complex, very multidimensional, like 100 dimensions easily, differential equations. We imagine that we model trajectories of these particles and everything that happens with them until the second measurement, which gives us another like margin, that boundary for our differential equation. So it's quite a normal, it is classical since Augustin Louis Cauchy mathematical problem, that you have two points in time or space, two points in space-time where you measure something. You only have data in these points. You have the value of the function. You have all the derivatives of these functions. You know everything about this function, but only in two points. And you need to restore this in what is going on in between. Or you can have a different problem when you only have one point, so-called boundary condition, and you are trying to predict what is going on in the opposite boundary point. So you invent differential equations and you solve them. It's called Cauchy, Augustin Louis Cauchy problem. And you solve the Cauchy problem. And you find what would be the value and all the derivatives of the function in the opposite boundary point. It works for mechanics. It was invented for mechanical problems. But our elementary particles physics designed experimentation in the physics of elementary particles is designed in such a way that these boundary points, they are unmovable. They are not points in time. In a mechanical problem, we can shift our measurement 2 seconds earlier or 2 seconds later, and we can verify if we solved our differential equations properly. So we are trying to predict the motion of a cannonball, and we have a photo camera. We shot the cannonball, we fired the cannonball, then we shot them, and we verify if our predictions are right or wrong because of the location of the actual photo captured location of the cannonball. And we can shift this photo capture in time, earlier or later, relative to the firing event. And thus obtain measurements in different points and verify our... So we actually do need this continuous model because first, we know that the motion is continuous, and second, our measurement point could be potentially located at any stage of this trajectory, and we actually do it, and we verify that our prediction of the cannonball motion is correct. This is something we cannot do with elementary particles because we design the measurement apparatus that cannot be scaled. How to say? An electron emitter emits electrons continuously, and fuck, the language fails me because it had to fail. Actually, the whole point of this story is that when you describe elementary particles, the normal human language fails you, and this is why we invented a new language. So okay, I'll try to accept this failure and get over it.